Hello, Ethnically Ambiguous family. Today it's a bonus episode with me, Shireen. If you can't tell it's me by now, I am sad. But it's still me, and I'm joined by a lovely guest and a lovely friend,
Melissa D. Montz.
Thank you so much. She is an amazing writer and producer and also in the podcast world, and I think you guys will learn a lot from her, so please stay tuned.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi!
Hello!
We are here. This is Shireen. We are here for a bonus episode of Ethnically Ambiguous, and today I am joined by my friend and someone that really inspires me, to be honest. I don't know if she knows that. Don't make it a thing.
I'm making it a thing.
Her name is Melissa Montz.
Melissa D. Montz.
Sorry. missed that initial.
I'm just messing with you.
But she is also in the podcasting world, which I thought was really cool because we have a lot of listeners that are so curious about podcasting and stuff. So you're here for a lot of reasons. The main one being that I like you a lot.
Okay.
But she's our guest for today for this bonus episode. And let's just start with how we met. Mm-hmm. We met like, okay,
We met on a journey.
We met on a journey. That is very true in a lot of ways. And I feel like I can remember how long I've been friends with someone based on what my hair looked like at the time.
Your hair is kind of getting back to what it looked like when we met.
Because I had very long hair when we met. It was like up to the middle of my back.
Yeah.
And that's when we met.
And my hair was straight.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it was. What a hair evolution. Oh. I mean, I love your hair now.
Thank you.
I love
it's
it.
In a fro.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
They'll see it in the photo that we post.
Okay.
But yeah, we met on a production. You were the director, and I was the assistant director and the cinematographer for a day.
Yeah.
Do
you remember
your cinematography? I remember that too well. It has scarred me. Basically what happened, so this production was called The Journey of the Vagina. And it never actually came out, not to my knowledge.
No.
But the day that I was a cinematographer was a day that the main character had sex for the first time. Was it the first time?
I think it was the first time. I don't really remember. It's been years.
It's been like 6 years. But the reason why I bring up that I was a cinematographer was that she wanted like a POV shot. And I had to be the one on the bottom getting fucked with the camera in my hand to get that POV shot. Also, I was a virgin when I did that, so.
Were you?
I was.
How far you've come since
then. I know. Oh, man.
But not really.
But not really at all. I was also a guest. I used to be the camera operator for a podcast that Melissa produces called Don't Blame Me. It's with Megan, and I want her last...
Rinks.
That's how you say it.
Megan Rinks, yeah.
It's with Megan Rinks. She's a very popular YouTube person that has become more than that since. She has like a brand. She has movies and everything. And a really cool podcast that I guested on. If you want to listen to it, you should. We posted about it when I was on, but we get kind of personal. It's an advice podcast, but I always talk about myself because I'm insufferable.
But that's how you connect with the listeners, to let them know that you're going through the same things.
And you
that they
did,
are.
And you did pick the questions for me.
But I do that for all guests.
I know.
We specialize because you don't want to like be asked questions that you're not.
No, it's a smart producer move.
Yeah,
you're a smart producer.
Thank you.
But I do want to ask about how you even got started in the podcast world, because I feel like when I met you, you weren't doing that.
Mm-mm. No, I mean, when you met me, I was very, I think I was only in LA for like a year, maybe at that time. And I was just like learning the ropes for everything. I don't even think I knew what a podcast was at that time.
Well, I was the same. I moved here in 2013.
Okay. I think it was probably, I don't know. Everything's getting mixed up now.
It's all blur.
I know. I started doing podcasting as I started as a PA on Not Too Deep with Grace Helbig.
Also someone I'm obsessed with. I love her.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's another YouTuber who has like crossed over into
books,
traditional media and books and
So you started as a PA for Not 2D with Grace Helbig. Mm-hmm. Were you, when you were a PA, were you like, oh, this can be something that I can do? Or was it more just it like was paying more, bills?
It was more about me just learning more about how the industry works. So I wanted to learn a little bit about everything in the entertainment industry. So I worked on that PA as a PA, and I eventually moved up to associate producer and now producer of the show. So I've been producing on this show for, I think, 2 years.
That's really badass. That's really cool. See, anything can happen. You can be a camera op. No, I'm just kidding.
And then a guest.
And then a guest. That's what I talked about on Don't Blame Me. Mm-hmm. Because I was the camera op, and then behind the camera, in front of the camera, what a journey. That'll be the title of this, a journey. But so then you started producing podcasts. Mm-hmm. How did you find that different from producing other stuff? Because I know you produce, you do some web series, you've done web series, you've done some shorts, and I remember I helped you on, was it like a, was it a...
You helped me on
like a proof of concept
it
or
was,
something?
It was a short that I did for one of those contests that you enter into. I had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
I produced and directed that. We wrote, I think you helped me on a few, actually, that I think of that. Which one are you referring to?
I'm thinking about the one with the car, where there was, we were in a car for some of it, and we was in Hollywood.
That's both and of the ones. Was it
the person's house had a Super Nintendo inside?
Okay. Yeah, that one. That's that one was, okay, got it. Yeah, that one was for a contest, Project Greenlight.
Yeah.
I just had a lot of fun with that.
Do you find that producing is similar regardless of the medium, though?
Yeah, it's all about organization, really. Organization and surrounding yourself with good people. So as long as you have that, it's pretty much the same thing. I mean. Yeah. My show, Mr. Student Body President, that I was a producer on, that was on a lot bigger scale than what a podcast is, but it's still...
What network was that on?
That was on Go90, which is a network that Verizon owned. And
there were a couple seasons, though, right?
We did 4 seasons.
That's really cool.
Yeah, 4 seasons of the show, and the platform doesn't exist anymore. But yeah. It was awesome. But we had a large crew for that, and it's just everything is just on a different scale.
Yeah. I think having a show that ran for multiple seasons must have been cool just as far as, like, I mean, like, I think of it like personal growth, like how you were the first season versus the second versus the third versus the fourth. It's probably just like a tight-knit family at that point.
I mean, the first season was cool because I was associate producer on that. And then for seasons 2 through 4, I was producer. But we shot season 2 through 4 all at the same time.
What?
Yeah, so we did.
How long did that take?
I think it was 40-day shoot, I think.
Holy shit! Yeah. It's like a feature, basically.
Yeah. I don't really remember, but we shot it as a cycle. So
wow.
Called it cycle 2, and we did everything all within weeks of each other.
That's impressive. Mm. Wow. That's when being a good producer can come in handy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of organization, like, I don't know, like, alpha changes, probably, continuity, and, like, whatever. Yeah. Damn. Since you are in so many different mediums, kind of, I feel like I relate to that a little bit because I have my foot in like podcasting, filmmaking, art, whatever. You have a main passion though.
My main passion is creating.
Yeah.
So I like to write, and I'm going to be producing some things this year. So
yay!
Yeah, that's my main passion. But I don't. It's like having kids. I don't love one more than
I
love
don't?
The other.
Nothing pulls you in a certain direction.
No.
I like that. Yeah. I feel like I personally struggle with that a little bit because a friend, told me, like, based on my social media presence that I'm a podcaster, not a filmmaker. And I got, for whatever reason, really mad about that because I just want to be a filmmaker that has a podcast.
I remember you telling me about that.
But, like, I don't know. I think... There's just, like, a thing in my brain that, like, I need to accept that I can do multiple things.
You can think of yourself as, like, a corporation that has different branches. And you have your filmmaking branch and your podcasting branch. That's how I consider myself.
This is why I like talking to you, because you're wise.
Yeah, be a mogul, man.
You're just wise, and you make me feel better about life. how, I want to talk to you about your personal journey. Mm-hmm. So you moved here about 6 years ago, you said?
I think seven. It might have been 2012 is when I moved here.
Where did you move from?
From Arkansas.
You're from Arkansas. Yeah. I knew that, but I'm trying to be surprised.
I
know.
I was born in Little Rock, Arkansas. I actually moved around a lot as a kid. Uh-huh. So I've lived in Tennessee and Mississippi and Texas and Pennsylvania and Kansas and I think that's everything. And then we ended up back in Arkansas when I was in eighth grade.
Wow.
My parents said once I got into high school, then we wouldn't move anymore.
Why were you guys moving so much?
Because my mom at the time, she worked for Kraft Foods. Mm-hmm. And so she worked in the sales division. And anytime that she got a promotion or anything, then we would move.
How did that affect you growing up? Were you like down for it or was it more?
Yeah,
just like...
I mean, I didn't know anything else. So that was just my way of life. Mm-hmm. And so it was pretty cool. I mean, I got to see a lot of places, made a lot of friends. I know that wherever I go, I can fit in with
That's
whoever.
Nice.
Yeah.
You became adaptable.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. You are like that though. I feel like I can take you anywhere and you'd be okay. You know? Like, you wouldn't be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
People can say that about me, and I like that too. Mm-hmm. Just like, I can take you to a party, and I don't have to like babysit you.
Right.
I'm like, I'm an adult.
I don't want to be babysat because I'm a grown ass.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I kiss on this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You can curse as much as you want. I say fucking way too much.
Okay.
But yeah, we did get a review that was like, you don't have to say curse words every 2 seconds. And I was like, yeah, I do though.
It's expression.
Yeah. Let me express myself. But when you were growing up, were you always interested in like the creative fields and stuff, or was it more just like something you discovered later on?
I was always interested, but I never thought of it as a career. Mm-hmm. I always thought of myself like being a doctor or something. Mm-hmm. But I used to. This is kind of. I'm not embarrassed by it. I'm very proud of it.
Okay, tell me.
So I used to write like scripts for Power Rangers when I was in like second or third grade.
Why would you be embarrassed about this?
I mean,
amazing.
If you look on my Instagram, there's a video of me doing Power Rangers.
What?
Have you not seen this?
I have not seen
this. Oh my gosh, I'm dressed as the Pink Ranger.
Okay, I'm looking this up as soon as we're done.
Yeah. But anyway, I would write scripts and then I would like, pass them. I'd write scripts at night and then pass them out to my friends during school, during the daytime. And then we would like do it.
So you were just like a mini production company.
Yeah. And then we do it during recess.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And so like.
Would you ever record them or was it more just like
acting? It was just acting and doing it and I guess me directing it because I was telling everybody how to do what they were doing, and I get very mad if they weren't
doing
it in character.
Of course, I can imagine little bossy Melissa just like being like, no.
Yeah, yep. And so I've always written things. I've always been very like into television to the point where like I research everything about whatever show that I was watching, but I never thought of it as a career until my last year in college. They offered a screenwriting class at my school for the very first time.
Whoa.
And I took that class and I absolutely fell in love, and like my plan was to go to dental school, and I was
really I didn't know that.
Yeah, I studied biology.
Holy shit.
And so but
your
like,
last year of college.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but I took like acting classes and other classes in the theater program, but I took them for fun, just the same way that I took like gymnastics and bowling and
You guys had a bowling
golf.
Class?
Yeah.
What? And golf?
Golf, yeah.
We have.
It's like basically for people that are going to be PE teachers, they take these classes.
That's pretty. I've never even heard of a bowling class or a golf class.
Yeah, so I took those.
In Arkansas?
Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, I went into school with a lot of like hours towards my degree, and I had, and I took classes in the summertime. So my senior year, I really didn't have that many classes left to take. So I just took a whole bunch of classes for fun because I didn't want to graduate.
Do you have any siblings?
I have two sisters.
Older or younger?
Younger.
So your parents, they probably like you were studying biology for 3 years out of your college or whatever. And
I mean, I worked in a dental office when I was in high school.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Why dentistry, do you think?
I'm obsessed with teeth.
Really?
Obsessed with teeth. Yeah.
So when I banged my tooth earlier on this mug, you were like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, like I have like a really like $200 toothbrush and advanced water pick that
I love water picks
a day. And
I did not know you love teeth.
Yeah.
Wow, I hope mine are wide enough for you.
You're good.
Thank you. That was more just me wanting validation. So, but then your parents must have always been like, oh, she's going to be a dentist.
Yeah, but they've always been super supportive of
That's
me.
That's good.
They, I told them, and they're like, okay, we support you.
You told them, what did you tell them?
I told them, actually, I went through like a little depression part of my life when I used to just like be a people pleaser. Mm-hmm. And I kind of had a crash my senior year of school where I was just like, I don't know, it was at that crossroad where I was like, I'd been planning to go to dental school for all this time. And now I don't know, like, that's not what I want to do. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. And I went to therapy for the first time during that time. And then I just started looking into different film schools and figuring things out. And I told my parents and they were very supportive of
me. That's beautiful. Yeah. That's so nice. Yeah. Well, they probably also like, remembered you as that kid that would write and like act out shit too. So they probably knew there was part of you that was like inherently creative.
Right.
That's really nice that they're supportive. Mm-hmm. But then moving to, so after you decided to pursue that, did you actually go to a film school?
Well, after I figured out that's what I wanted to do, I worked for a couple years just saving up money. Mm-hmm. And during that time, I would come out here and go to work on different student films, like at AFI and UCLA, just to, because like moving is a big deal, just to make sure that's what I wanted to do. And then.
Wow, you're very responsible.
Yeah.
Most people will just be like, pack up and go.
No, because I don't like
that's the producer in you. That's the producer in you.
It is, because I don't like to really like struggle. That's not part of what I want to do. So I always have to have a plan for something.
Yeah.
So once I came out here, I went to UCLA Extension Program and studied film and studied the producing, directing, and writing.
Wow. Programs. Was there any of those things that you were that really sparked joy in you? Like whether
like all of them
really?
Did. Yeah, I love every part of production.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's so nice. Sometimes I think. I'm organized, but I'm more spontaneous. Like, I wouldn't have, like, planned out as much as you did. I think that's why producing is, like, the least one that I'm excited about sometimes. Like, I do it because I'm neurotic, but I'm really impressed that, like, a young Melissa, like, in her early, mid-20s was like, I'm going to have a plan for this because I wouldn't. I moved out here with nothing.
Oh, my gosh.
But you were younger, too, right? I was like 23.
Yeah.
I was 23, but it was also like my parents weren't very supportive back then, and I was trying just like to run away. But that is crazy, though. I think that speaks about, because like, I don't know, because I feel like I met you not like late in life, but like mid-20s. Like you weren't a kid anymore.
Right.
But you were so sure of yourself back then, I remember. And I remember thinking like, how you got to be that person, but it sounds like you were always that person.
I always just have a plan, and I think it has a lot to do with my parents just always believing me and speaking things
That's
into
really
my life and never doubting anything that I do. So
I feel like it is also like a conventional older child.
True.
Like identity, right? Mm-hmm. What are you, did your younger siblings, were they influenced by your decision to be in the creative field at all?
No. I mean, my middle sister, they own a clothing company and a store that I help out with too called Imprint that's in Arkansas. And then they both like had one, the middle sister, she was working in corporate and then quit to do the store full time, and then my youngest sister is still working like in corporate, but she's still working.
That's really
like,
cool.
With the clothing store and everything.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
you're like the better version of the Kardashians.
Wow,
the only version I care about.
Follow us around. And get some fun out of that.
Yeah, I'd watch that show. I've also never been to Arkansas. I feel like I have this. Part of me really wants to explore. Like states like Arkansas and like places that have just like they're not typically filmed in because I think there's so much there to be filmed.
Yeah, like, I mean, the newest season of True Detective was filmed there.
It's
filmed like outside of where my parents live right now.
What?
Yeah.
Are you watching it?
I've watched the first episode. I haven't watched the rest, but okay. I really
well
like
catch up.
I will
because the finale is coming up in a couple weeks.
Okay. Yeah, but they say Fayetteville a lot. that's like where a lot of it takes place. And
I guess
that's
I never like put
yeah.
it together.
Mm-hmm.
This is gonna sound ignorant, maybe because I'm not from that area, but yeah. like a lot of times everything blends in.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, the only from the first episode that I saw, that's from like really outside of like the city of Fayetteville, mm-hmm. but they mentioned it
yeah,
a few times in the episode, and it's not the area that I grew. And also, this takes place like in the. What, 80s?
They have three timelines. Okay. One's in the 80s, one's in the 90s, and one is, like, 2015.
Okay, yeah, and, like, it's more, like, right now, it's more, like, suburban.
Of course, yeah. yeah.
It's not
but
how it
that,
looks.
That show does do a really good job of, like, jumping between timelines, mm-hmm. though. I think you'll get more into it after the first yeah. couple episodes, but it's a really phenomenal... It makes you... I think shows like that inspire me to film in places like that, because mm-hmm. it's, like... There's so much more than just filming in like a fucking dorm room or like a cityscape or
right.
whatever. There's history everywhere.
Uh-huh.
I want to talk more about
you.
Okay. After a quick
break. Awesome.
And we're back. I want to talk to you about. So you would write Power Ranger stuff
mm-hmm.
when you were growing up, but was there when you started writing for yourself and like screenwriting and stuff? Did you find yourself writing, like, was there a story that you wanted to tell?
I think the first places where I started to write were plays.
Oh.
And I was writing more at that time. It wasn't for myself. It was more, like, for, I took a, before they had offered the screenwriting class, there was a playwriting class that I had taken, too. And I wrote more. Based on what I thought people would enjoy and not
okay.
what I enjoyed. And it was good. Like, I think it was good. And I got a lot of praise from my teacher. And she, like, told me that
mm-hmm.
she singled me out and said that she's like, I think you do have, like, a future in this.
Whoa.
But again, this is still, like, when I thought I was going to dental school.
Right.
I was like, whatever.
Yeah. Like, it was a cool hobby.
Yeah. And so it wasn't very personable at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But now I feel like, yeah, now I'm writing for myself and writing characters that I relate to or the
yeah.
people in my life.
Yeah. Can you give me like, you don't have to spoil anything, but mm-hmm. is it usually like a version of yourself, whether it's like a woman of color or like things that you've went through personally, or do you find it more just about women in general?
I would say it's more of like women in general, but there's like aspects of my life that are specifically related to what's going on in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as a woman of color, do you uh-huh. find yourself like wanting to heighten those voices though? Like I think you existing just already heightens those voices.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that I've tried to express is that like I don't have to make a movie about being Syrian
right.
to be represented as a Syrian person.
Right.
Do you feel like that too? Like, would you rather just have a film about a woman and not reference her race?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I feel. And I think that, like, we're just you, I, anyone,
yeah.
any person, color, shape, we're just people.
Mm-hmm.
And we can be relatable on any level.
Yeah.
And so I don't feel like I need to, like, explicitly say that they're this color.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it doesn't matter to me, but that's what, like, when I write things, I mostly envision what the people
mm-hmm.
look like, and that's where a look board comes
yeah.
into play.
Yeah.
But I don't think about it that much as I'm writing.
Are you writing anything right now?
I am.
Are you writing a feature?
I am writing a feature, and I'm also writing a couple pilots as well.
What?
Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah, your work ethic is something I really admire.
Thank you.
Because we're both freelance, essentially. Like, would you say you're still freelance, or are you?
I mean, I have my own company,
mm-hmm.
and I guess, like, technically, no, I'm not freelance. I am an employee of my
right.
company, but I don't have.
You're
really,
like a full time job. Kind
yeah,
of thing.
I don't have a full time
yeah.
job. I make my own schedule.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty fucking great.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as someone who also doesn't have a full time job, it's hard for me to sometimes stay motivated or at least hold myself accountable to be motivated
mm-hmm.
and, like, make my own stuff. But I feel like every time – I feel like we had coffee a couple months ago when I was in a rut. And, like, after seeing you, I was like, I'm fine. Like,
really?
And really, it's true. I think you need people in your life that aren't like, you should be working on something, but are more just like they can lead by example. And you're someone that keeps working and, like, keeps going at it. And you've made a successful circle around you based on just like you. And back to like something else I really think is cool about you is that now you're as a producer on Don't Blame Me, you are sometimes in front of the camera.
And I'm co-host of that show as well.
I think it's really cool because podcasting, I'm sure you're aware, is like dominated by like straight white guys. And just even seeing you be a part of that, I think you don't have to be like, hey, I'm Alyssa. Also, I'm black. Like, it's just like, I can see that you're a woman of color and like speaking your mind and everything. And that, I think, speaks volumes.
Funny enough, the first time I was in front of the camera, everyone was like, I thought you were white.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't that so telling of what people assume?
Yeah, because we posted on YouTube, so like the comments are there, and a lot of people thought I was white.
Of course they did, because they're just like, this is a podcast. Do black women have podcasts? Unless you're like two dope queens, I guess. But it's fun. It's interesting for me and Anna, though, because our podcast is kind of about our ethnicity for the most part, so people know that we're not white, but they still comment like, well, you look Caucasian.
Don't.
I mean, thank you. But like some whiteies will be like, well, you have white privilege, which I do. I can acknowledge that sometimes I'm passing, but I don't acknowledge that I have white privilege because I don't relate to that experience at all. And that's a conversation for another day. But my point is, I think seeing women of color, especially women of color, not just people of color, but women of color doing things that are stereotypically not conventional as far as like what people assume, whether it's you being a black woman on a podcast and especially in front of the camera now, which I really appreciate, I think that is representation. You don't have to just be like, I'm gonna make black things, I'm gonna make Arab things,
I'm making things that people enjoy, and they're a part of,
because we're all the same, we're all human, man. And I really like Melissa's episodes on Don't Blame Me, especially the most recent one. This is gonna come out in about a month, so this is gonna be a little dated when I say this.
Yeah, because we do the episodes with just me and Megan. Those are like usually like in the middle of the month. So what she says might be a little dated.
But. Yeah, but you should go back and you can look it up on Megan's YouTube channel. Just look up pegging. But basically, so the whole premise of the show is that it's an advice podcast where callers or listeners call in and ask for advice. And something I admire about Melissa and just the podcast in general is it's very open. And like, I think because of that, I was like, I'm already pretty open, like an open book, but like it inspires you to be open when you're on it because you're just like, you want to relate to people and like just like with your own experiences. But I did want to bring this up because it's not a topic we've ever talked about as ambiguous. And I am passionate about it in a lot more ways than one. But pegging.
Okay.
On the episode that I listened to, which came out the middle of February, when you listen to this, so the middle of February.
February 11th.
A listener called in about her boyfriend being interested in pegging, and she was like really distraught because she was like, does that make him gay? Does that mean he should be with a man? Yada, yada. And I mean, like Megan, I think her advice is truly like pretty great all the time. But
straightforward.
Yeah, it is. But your reactions to it are so refreshing. It's not like, I don't know. And as someone who has experimented with a lot of things sexually, like it's refreshing that you can be seen by a podcast, like a podcast. Like, I don't know. I just love it.
Yeah.
I just love
it. We try to cover all topics and pretty much nothing's off limits unless it's harming someone. And so if it's harming someone, then we'll report things.
Yeah, of course.
I get that word out. But nothing's off the table.
You did talk about how your introduction to pegging was Broad City.
Yeah.
Which that was a great episode.
Yeah, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was Abby pegging her neighbor essentially. And
that she had a crush on.
Also, okay, if you guys don't know what pegging is, it's when... This is weird.
Do you want me to say it?
Yeah, you can take it. Because I feel like as Shireen and Ethnically Ambiguous, they're going to be... They don't expect me to talk about pegging.
Yeah. So pegging is when a woman wears a strap on and goes at it with a guy from behind.
Yeah. And it's thrilling.
I've never experienced this, but so you tell me.
Well, okay. I guess I have to backtrack. I never had a strap on physically on me, but I've used a dildo on a man. And I honestly think a man that is comfortable with himself sexually like that is even more of a man.
Right.
Like, I think like that just speaks volumes about his like sexual confidence, you know? And I just really love that. But I think also when I'm with women, I become kind of a man. Like, I take on the more aggressive role. Just I don't know why that happens, but I do. I'm aggressive by nature, but, like, when I'm with a woman and only a woman, I become, like, the stereotypical quote-unquote man. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think hearing women talk about sex and sexuality and, like taboo subjects, as people would think of taboo. I don't think it's taboo, obviously, because I'm talking about it, but I think that's something that I admire about you too. It's not like, because I think especially women of color are like, sometimes they feel the need to be like a model minority,
right?
And
which I felt that way,
of course,
like,
we all
all
did
my life until I really came into my blackness, I would say. Because
how did that happen?
I mean I grew up like in suburban areas where I was usually like the only black person except for my sisters.
Wow.
In school and things. So I always like felt like I had to be like, I just wanted to blend in and not be the black girl.
Can I ask if that's why you would straighten your hair?
No, that was more, I mean, at the time, like most black women were doing that anyway. And it's like kind of like a rite of passage when you go to kindergarten. That's what
would
happen, is that you'd get a relaxer on your hair. And so
maybe it's kind of like Arab girls and getting like their arms waxed.
Maybe
the same thing. Maybe like their eyebrows done.
So I mean, that's what everybody, people didn't really like quote unquote start going natural until like the 2000s, like returning to that. And so I the main reason I went natural is because out here in LA, it costs a lot to get your hair done.
Really?
Like,
that was the main motivator.
Wow. It costs a lot for me to get a relaxer.
But it looks so fucking great.
I know. And I didn't know what my, I did not remember what my hair looked like, because I hadn't had it like natural since I was kindergarten age.
Wow. So, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Do your siblings and your mom, what's their preferred?
My middle sister, she actually went like natural before most of us did.
The middle child's the rebel. I can tell you that.
So she, but she like puts on wigs and straight wigs and stuff all the time. She's always like been very much into her hair. And then my mom just recently went natural.
Nice.
I want to say a year ago. Then my youngest sister, she's just like, usually has like weaves in her hair and stuff. So we're all different.
I just love that. I love hair. I mean, if you can't tell, hair expression means a lot to me.
Yeah.
But what do you mean? I want to go back to what you said about coming into your blackness. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that a little bit? Because we have some black listeners on our show, and I feel like when we do have a black guest on, I don't want to only bring on people that are like Arab. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I think being color, a person of color, is so much more than that. And I want to know what that means to you to come into your blackness.
Okay. Yeah. And like I said before, I mostly grew up with white people, and I just always just wanted to fit in and not be different, even though my parents like always like pushed me to be like a black woman and didn't like they were like, you're strong and beautiful. They would like encourage me to, if there were other black kids at the school, they encouraged me to like be friends with them. But I didn't have classes or anything with them. So it'd be weird for me to like
to
walk up to
out.
Somebody and be like, hey, you want to be my friend? But I just, I think when I went, and it would always be like, if I would be around black people, they'd be like, you act white.
Right.
And I was just like, I'm not acting any type of way. Just this is just how I am.
Yeah.
And then when I went off to college, I was in a black, I still am in a black sorority. And it was, that was like my first time that I was really, even though I went to a PWI, predominantly white institution, I was still like in the pocket of my black sorority.
What motivated you to join that sorority?
It's my mom's sorority too.
Oh,
so
really?
I'm a legacy. Yeah.
Well, that's so cool.
Yeah. And she pledged at that same school too. So it was pretty cool. And
what
so,
made it different from other sororities, you think? Other than
think
the obvious.
It's it is a, like, as compared to other, like, Panhellenic, which is, like, white sororities, or National Panhellenic, which is the black sororities. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, because I don't know anything. I mean, I'm not really a Greek life savvy person.
Yeah, so my sorority, it's a lifetime commitment. It's not just something you do in college. I'm still an active member now.
What does that mean? Like, what do you
have? We still have chapter meetings and do things in the community. And
I love that.
Yeah, like, my mom's the president of her chapter that's in Arkansas.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Still? That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So,
so it's like a lifetime. It's like a
lifetime
community.
Yeah, and so it's a community of people. No matter where I go, I know that I have a sister somewhere. Wow. It's very like community service driven, mm-hmm. and being supreme in service to all mankind.
I love that.
So, and it's a real sisterhood. It's not just like people you hang out with in college. It's something that
it's not
continues.
Just like getting drunk and mm-hmm. like whatever. It's about like
doing things connecting for the community.
Yeah. I love that. That's what it should be about.
Right.
Are your sisters also a part of it?
No, they're not.
Why do you think that is?
Because they're not ready yet.
Oh, really?
But you can still join. You can join.
You don't have to be
like
in a college.
Nope. You can join at any time.
I like that a lot more mm-hmm. than like the stereotypical Greek life.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that's what a sorority should be. Right. It's like an everlasting sisterhood. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot more. I like that. I do want to ask.
Kamala Harris is in my sorority.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dude, that's a fucking VIP.
I can name a ton of
that's amazing
black women that are in my sorority.
But did that help you come into your blackness, you would
it
say?
It did. Even like when I first joined, there were still like black people that would say I was basically a white girl.
What motivated them to say that, you think?
I just think it's the way that I talk and the way that I act and the music that I like to listen to. And then I think like once ever like people started getting to know me better, they just like that's just who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Just moving here, I feel like there's a lot of black people that are like me that like from the suburbs and mm-hmm. Grew up with mostly white people, and I mean I just accept
yeah.
who I am,
it doesn't make you any less black.
No.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
And I'm proud of it.
Yeah. I think Donald Glover talks about that a lot, too.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, yeah, I relate to him on a lot of levels.
I was thinking of him when you were talking, being like, yeah, it's like really similar as mm-hmm. far as his story goes.
Right.
Yeah. Because, right. like, it's unfortunate that, like, some ignorant people will, like, see a educated or intelligent black person and be like, that means they're white-ish.
Right.
Even though, like, that's absurd.
It's like another form of, I would say, passing, because like personality wise you can pass more.
Yeah. Whether it was how someone thought you were white on the podcast or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it would make you any different. You're still you.
I'm me.
Yeah. That's really fascinating. Yeah. I think that's why I appreciate Donald Glover so much. Like, because he's not shy about how even as a black man, there's still discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate discrimination, obviously. I want to ask about your parents.
Okay.
How do they meet?
I don't know, actually.
What?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever asked them that question.
How?
I don't know.
Wait, are they both from Arkansas?
Yeah.
And what, do you know when they got married?
Like 35, 36 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are they still together?
Mm-hmm.
So they're in love, you would say?
Yeah.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
I guess I'll never know
how
they
met.
They
love each other. But, I don't know. I know that they have, like, mutual friends, so probably, like, that way.
Yeah.
But I don't know how they met.
That's
crazy. I've never even thought to ask them.
What?
No.
That's so crazy to me.
Yeah.
That's, like, something I'm obsessed with.
I know that he had my dad, like, straighten his hair at the time.
Oh,
so he
really?
Had, like, long, straight hair.
Wow, what a badass.
Yeah.
Some punk rock shit. Some metal shit right there. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I wonder if your parents ever came across those same struggles, though, with not reconciling, but like, if someone ever confronted them about their blackness.
No, I know they didn't, because they grew up like around mostly black people.
Oh.
I know, though, that my mom does talk about, because she worked in corporate America. She talks about how she could like put on, like, she can be in white America and can easily be in black America, but like it takes someone special to be able to do that,
right?
But they've never had to deal with something like that.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to meet your parents.
They're cool. Angela and Howard.
Did they ever come out here?
My dad doesn't like to fly, so he actually has not been out here, but my mom has come a few times. She was here for Thanksgiving.
Oh,
Yeah.
That's so nice. Did you cook her anything?
Oh, yeah. Our plan was to go to my favorite movie theater. They were having, like, Thanksgiving dinner.
Really?
Because I think you've been to that movie theater that I am referring to for my birthday.
Oh, I have. Yes.
So, you know, they have, like, a restaurant. Yeah. So they were doing Thanksgiving dinner there. And then my mom's like, no, we should cook. And so I did cook. And I love to cook. So.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah,
I did. Dinner.
Okay.
But right now, let's just go.
Okay. I have this paper that has 666 on it. Very on brand for you.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that is something I wrote for this podcast I was a guest on.
I mean,
my NBA draft team was the 666ers. and on that note, we're going to take one more quick commercial break. And we're back with Melissa D.
Mm-hmm. D stands for diamond.
Oh, it does. I know that. I recognize that. What's that middle name from?
It's from my great-grandmother on my dad's side.
It's a beautiful middle name.
My first name's from my great-great-grandmother on my parents' side. I mean, my mom's side.
Your parents' side. Yeah. Just the one. Just the conglomerate one, parent.
Yeah.
I like that. That's history. Mm-hmm. History. My middle name was just a name that my mom read reading the credits of a movie that she thought looked cool.
Cool.
Yeah, it means sky in Hawaiian.
Okay.
Yeah. So, there's that. So, as a writer, as a filmmaker, is there, because I feel like I have this problem when people are like, what's your favorite film? Who do you look up to? Because I feel like I just make stuff on my own and I don't really need an inspiration. I just, not like I'm avoiding it, but like there's no like one person I look up to. But is there a person like that for you where you like admire their career or you admire the way they've come about their journey or whatever like that?
Shonda Rhimes Ava DuVernay.
Yeah.
Ava is also a member of my sorority.
Fuck yeah!
but Shonda, I see her as the mentor that I've never met.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, she like wrote Crossroads, if you didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
She wrote The Princess Diaries too.
What?
Yeah.
From the shadows, man.
Yeah.
What?
So like I see myself like writing a feature and then being able to more easily translate that or what am I looking for?
Like transcend? Or like?
No, transition.
Transition.
It'll more easily, so yeah. I can transition into like television producing. Because
Television's your main goal, you think?
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah. What about television versus movies, you think, speaks to you more?
Television speaks to me more just because I like to go on the journey with the character for a lot longer. When I'm watching something, like I feel the characters like in me.
Yeah.
Like, last year was a really like tough year because I lost Scandal and I lost New Girl and so it was just like
it does allow for more character development for sure,
and I feel like I know these people and I love television.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I like that because I think there is some people that think of it as a hierarchy and I think it's absurd.
I think it's changing now though.
I think it's changing too. I think there are some shows that have elevated television for. Like, to make others that have been in doubt of television believe it. Mm-hmm. Whether it was, like, for me, I mean, The Sopranos, I think, is phenomenal. And that was a while ago. But I had just watched it recently, and I was like, oh, this is cinematic art.
Right.
And then there was, like, True Detective. Like, the first season was like, what?
Yeah, I remember True Detective. It used to come on before Girls.
Oh,
and so I would always watch Girls every Sunday. And then it was an episode of True Detective. It was where that one episode where they did that one long shot that was just one shot that lasted for
I remember
10
that.
Minutes. And it was amazing. And I think Cary Fukunaga, I'm sorry if I pronounce his name wrong, but he's a cinematographer and I think director for that episode too. And I remember watching that and my jaw just dropped.
Yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm.
I hadn't seen any of the episode. Yeah. I just saw that part, and I was like, okay, now I have to watch this show.
That's what television can do, though. Mm-hmm. It can just, like, and I think that was one of the first shows that, like, A-list stars were in, like, Matthew McConaughey, and, like, typically, movie stars had become into television. And I think, as far as I can remember, I think that was one of the first shows that opened that door. And then there was, like, Big Little Lies. Big Little Lies. There was like all movie stars in that, whether it was Reese Witherspoon or Nicole Kidman or whatever. And that was like
Laura
last
Dern
year. Laura Dern. But I do think there's more crossover now for sure.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I like thinking of that way. Because I think as someone who loves movies and like is a filmmaker, I think sometimes there are like movie buffs that
They shame TV, but they also like shame most movies, and they're just into like these deep cuts that nobody like really watches, which people should watch. Yeah. But like you don't have to be a snob and stick your nose up at different forms of television or movies. Like it's movies and television are there to entertain you. If you're entertained, why are you judging someone else for what they like?
Yeah, I like that. You're so wise. But I was just thinking about, like, The Sopranos would not be a good movie. Like, the reason why The Sopranos works and why
I actually haven't seen The Sopranos.
I was like you a year ago.
Especially since they're doing, like, the prequel.
And his son is playing him, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm into it, though. But the reason why TV works sometimes is because over years and over multiple episodes, like the characters become like they're you're part right of
your family.
Yeah, like they grow so much more. Mm-hmm. Like seeing like Tony Soprano, I'm just talking about it but now because I'm talking about that show, but like
I know from episode ends, one so you can talk about it.
Episode one to the end though, like just his character, you see the underbelly of it and also like the goodness of it, and it's fucking epic, man. Yeah. Like whether it's Edie Falco's character or like whoever's character, like there's growth there. Mm-hmm. And you can't achieve that in a lot of movies.
Right.
Because you have a limited time. Mm-hmm. Unless it's like a fucking epic movie or whatever, and like it's, you have like an intermission in between or some shit. Right. I don't know. But yeah. I love movies. I love TV.
What are you watching?
Right now?
Uh-huh.
I'm watching the third season of True Detective.
Okay.
I'm watching the last season of Broad City. Okay. R.I.P.
Okay, so I don't have cable. But
I don't have cable.
I have Hulu streaming. So where are you watching Broad City?
ComedyCentral.com.
But like the second episode, I've been trying to watch it and it's not up.
I've watched all of them.
Does it come up a lot later?
No. It comes up like the day after.
Okay. Well, I must be clicking on the wrong thing. Because I watched the first episode. It was there. And then I tried to watch the second episode and it said that I needed to log in.
I do have a login.
Oh, that's why. I don't have anything to log in. I use my parents'
Got it. Account. They have a DirecTV or something. I can give you their password.
Okay.
After the show. But until my parents got one, I was using my friend's husband's parents' account.
Yeah.
Because I am garbage. Mm.
Comedy Central, I just gotta give a shout out to Comedy Central. You guys, like, most of the people that are watching your network are, like, younger people that don't have cable.
Yeah.
Why did you take everything off Hulu? The Daily Show's not on Hulu, like, and I have Hulu streaming, that's like cable, so.
Yeah. Like, who has cable now?
Right.
No one has cable.
Right.
Does anyone have cable? Actually, I know Anne has cable.
Okay.
Never mind. but I haven't had cable the whole time I've been in LA, and I've been fine.
Yeah.
I didn't even have a TV the first 3 years, because I had a studio and poor. This is taking a turn.
We were talking about TV shows. What are you watching?
Well, that's right now, those are the two I'm watching. I'm also watching Shameless, and it's like honestly gone really downhill, but I'm just sticking with it for the time being.
Shameless is one of those shows that I watched and then I was like, I enjoy this, but it's just not something that I'm going to add to my regular rotation.
I have just like this disgusting animal inside me that's like, I have to finish what I started. And like, even if it sucks, I have to finish it.
I was with Glee until like the last season, until like the like fifth to last episode. Wow. And I didn't even finish.
I've never seen a single episode of Glee. I'm not going to lie. I'm proud of myself for that.
Okay. We all have our thing.
We all have our... I mean,
you sound
I
like you're sticking your nose up at something.
I'm not... No, I just don't like musicals.
Okay.
I'm not like a campy person.
Got it.
You know?
Yeah.
Can you
I
tell?
Love campy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, I wouldn't have assumed that, though.
Yeah.
Just by your persona.
Yeah. I love stuff. Yeah. I love stuff that makes fun. Like, Deadpool, my favorite thing in the world.
I mean, Deadpool is a different kind of campy. Yeah. But it's a different kind of campy. Yeah. It's not like rainbows.
Yeah,
it's
but like there are rainbows. Campy. He does have rainbows a lot.
I mean, that's true. That's true. I think I'm more of a fan of like a dark campy than like.
But I don't think you gave Glee a fair shot because it's pretty dark.
Okay. Okay. Well, maybe there'll be a time where I need a good show. I'll probably never watch.
Just watch the first season.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. How many are there?
5 or 6, I think.
Oh, it's not that bad.
Yeah, but really, you'll get all you need in the first
season. Okay, touche. Good to know. I should not stick my nose up at it. I should not. I think it's also because I went to school a lot of, because my roommate for most of my college experience was in musical theater, and mm-hmm. so I knew a lot of like theater, musical theater kids.
Yeah.
And some of them annoyed me.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do.
But there's only like two characters that are really like into musical theater, and the other ones like make fun of them.
Oh, okay. So. I think I'll like that though.
Yeah.
And this is something I've never asked you before, but since you took drama classes and mm-hmm. since you would act when you were like a kid with this Power Ranger stuff,
mm-hmm.
are you interested in acting at all?
I used to act a lot.
Really?
I did this thing called Arkansas Kids for Health, and it's like the videos they would show in like the elementary schools to teach kids about health.
Really?
Yeah. And I played like all these different characters, and I was like the guide. And
I want to see this.
People, I don't even know like where you would be able to see a copy. I'm sure they don't show it anymore. But like little kids would come up to me and be like, "Are you the girl from?"
Oh my god!
From the videos, but it was shown all in like the whole state of Arkansas.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, are you a child actor this whole time?
No. Well, when I did that, I was like 18, so technically, no, oh. I was not a child actor. But it was like I was in high school when I did it.
But since then, though, have you been, when you moved here especially?
No, I'd never did anything acting-wise.
But do you want to?
I think I'm going to, like, take classes to help more just to understand with writing, but mm-hmm. not go out as an actor. I wouldn't go out as an actor.
I think that's wise. I think understanding the role of an actor as someone who is writing or directing or producing, I think that is so essential.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes you just a better writer and director and producer.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's wise. Again, you are just wise. God damn it.
But I still haven't done it yet. I mean, that's always been on my list, but I still haven't done
it. No, but just the fact that you have that foresight, I think, is telling.
I mean, and I've taken acting classes before, but they were all before I lived in Los Angeles.
It was in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a dream guest or a dream person you want to collaborate with? Or
yeah, Shonda Rhimes. Like
she's like the apex.
Yeah, she's my apex. Like she is, and I know her office is at Netflix. That's right down the street. But she is like my queen. Like I look up to her.
What really sold that for you? Was it just everything she's ever done?
Everything
or was it
she's
Scandal,
done.
Or?
I mean, I've been writing with her since like Grey's Anatomy. I still watch Grey's Anatomy.
You're the only person I know that watches Grey's Anatomy.
You say that, but Grey's Anatomy is still like a top show. That's like
how. It's like 20 seasons or something now. How is it still going on?
Because it's still freaking good. And she doesn't.
How could it still be good?
It's still because they rotate characters in and out. There's like only a few that are still like the original cast.
How many people can die?
I mean, it's a hospital. I mean, people can die all
sure,
the time.
Sure, sure.
So it's still freaking good.
It's still on?
Yeah, it's still on. It's on ABC. It's already been renewed for next season.
How many? That
and it has
crazy.
A spinoff called, I forgot what it's
Private
called.
Private Practice?
Private Practice was a spinoff that's not on, but now they have one that's like a fire department spinoff that takes place like down the street from where Grey's Anatomy, so they do a lot of crossover with it.
Grey's Anatomy is wild.
Yeah.
It's an impressive fucking show based on the fact that it's still alive.
Right, and like now at this point, she's not the showrunner for that show. Mm-hmm. She's handed it off to one of the other writers that was on the mm-hmm. show, but she's still executive producer. She's got like a ton of projects that are coming out at Netflix that she's EPing.
Wow.
She moved her deal from ABC to Netflix. Mm-hmm. And so like I respect
her. Was that your
her.
Introduction to her though, Grey's Anatomy?
I mean, I saw Princess Diaries 2. I didn't know she wrote
it. Right.
And I don't think I was like interested in writing as a career at that point. But Grey's Anatomy was when I first learned who she was.
I think a lot of us did.
And then watching her career, just like how many shows, like she has a whole day on Thursday that's just her shows.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, like TGIT.
Yeah.
And I just think she's a phenomenal businesswoman.
Wow. Yeah, she is a good person to look up to.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, and I read her book, A Year of Yes, and it was a year, like, I related to her because she talked about how she was just so, like, involved with her writing and mm-hmm. wasn't really living her life. And one year, she just decided to say yes to everything, well, everything within reason.
Right.
And it just changed who she was, like, as a person, and her career really, like, took off more, where she became more of, like, a figure like as Shonda Rhimes instead of like the person behind the mm-hmm. camera too. So I respect her so much.
Yeah.
She adopted her children that she loves so much. She's just a great person.
Wow. I like that. I didn't know that she adopted her. I mean, you know a lot more about her than I do. I'm gonna have to Google her after this. But I mean, it is interesting that as a woman of color, she also doesn't just focus on mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. I think it just speaks of like when a woman comes on a show, it's like, what's it like being a woman in your industry? Right. It's just like, it's not about just that.
She talks a lot about how like she used Grey's Anatomy as kind of like a Trojan horse
mm-hmm.
To like bring more people of color in. Like she fought for
Sandra Oh
yeah. to be, which Sandra Oh.
Have you seen Killing Eve?
I haven't yet. I haven't you because I know Killing I would love Eve. It, but I have a show that I'm writing that's kind of similar context to it. And so I don't
want to, you don't want to influence
I don't want to influence what I'm doing. So, but she talks about how she like fought for Sandra Oh and how, one of the characters was supposed to be this short little Jewish woman, and she's played by a black one. That's one of the original characters that's still on Bailey.
Oh yeah, she's still around.
Yeah,
oh, Bailey.
And then like there's so many, like most of the main people mm-hmm. on Grey's Anatomy now are black women.
Yeah.
So
Bailey is like an OG.
Yeah, I'm glad she's still OG. Around. She's around. The chief, he's still around. He's not the chief anymore, but he's still around. Bailey is the chief.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. That is, I mean, you would love Killing Eve.
I know.
Please watch it as soon as you're writing.
I remember the first time when I watched Princess Diaries mm-hmm. and I saw
Sandra O's in that too.
Yes, she's the principal and she.
Holy shit.
And she just says, Gupta?
Yeah.
The queen is here. Or she's like, the queen is here or something like that. And I was like, who is this woman?
Oh but, my God. I totally forgot that mm-hmm. she was in that too.
Mm-hmm.
Is Shonda Rhimes the reason for Sandra Oh being in our like entertainment
I think she's
world?
The one that like
fought for
really,
her.
She fought for her for Grey's Anatomy because they didn't want her.
She's a phenomenal actress.
She is.
I mean, like I knew that, but I hadn't seen her in a lot of things until I saw Killing Eve recently because I don't watch Grey's Anatomy anymore because
mm-hmm.
I haven't watched it for like the past like 15 years.
I've rewatched it twice.
That's absurd.
That's another thing where I'm sticking. Also, I like soap operas, so that could be a reason too.
Yeah, I think it's a big part of it.
But like, it's the growing with the characters. I've seen how all these people have grown. Even like after Derek died on Grey's Anatomy, mm-hmm. you can see how Meredith dealt with being a widow and a single mother, and now she's like finally getting back into dating, just like this season.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's realistic.
Yeah,
It is. Impressive that actress has like made a fucking career from one character.
She's done that. She's an EP on the show now. She's an EP on the spinoff. Yeah, Station 19 is the name of it.
There it is.
And she like she is very much involved with it. And she did a whole article I think that came out last year talking about taking reign of your career. You should read it. I will.
Her name is
Ellen Pompeo.
Ellen Pompeo. Because she doesn't do movies or anything.
No, she said, like, once she was like, at this point in my life, I've aged out being able, like, it would be really hard for me to go have, like, a movie career or even another career after a show like this. So I want to be an EP on anything that has to do with
I'll
Grey's Anatomy so that I can, like, I am Meredith Grey, so.
Yeah. I mean, she is.
Yeah, she is.
I know that name more than I know her name. So.
Yeah. But she's awesome. She's like, she's very much an ally for mm-hmm. people of color. So she's amazing.
I think that speaks to Shonda Rhimes' ability to pick people, though, mm-hmm. too.
She has a no asshole. That's her like motto for working
when,
with people.
I remember when there was an actor that like said some gay slur or something. He was like fired immediately. Mm-hmm. He was teenage, like apologize and then move on.
Yeah, he did. But. Like he apologized and they made amends. And he actually came when Sandra Oh's character because he was her fiance.
Yeah,
and they had to like
that was a great couple though.
Yeah, they were a great couple,
fucking couple.
And then they just had to like write him off abruptly. And like she never really recovered from like her character wise never really recovered. But when she left the show, he helped shepherd her into the next part. So he did come like they made amends.
They made
and
amends.
And he come back and well, he apologized and everything.
That's a good point as far as like. Growth both in real life and in Grey's Anatomy life, you know. But yeah, please.
We went on a long tangent.
We
about
did. I did not expect that. I part of me is a little ashamed, but I'm into it. But you have to promise me when you watch Killing Eve eventually to tell me because.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I love Phoebe Waller-Bridge, mm-hmm. who did... Have you seen Fleabag, at least?
Oh, yes. Fleabag is the new season's coming out soon, isn't it?
Fleabag is, like, my fucking bread and butter. Like, yeah. That's the show that I would want to make.
Me,
like, that's
too.
That's the show I would, like... That's what I know I'm a fan of something is, like, if I wish I had made it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, whether it's that show or...
Grace said that yesterday.
Really?
Mm.
I love her. but I feel that way about Lily Amanpour's Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. Like, I feel that way...
I haven't heard of that.
Girl Walks Home Alone at Night?
No.
It's a movie. It's set in Iran, but filmed in Bakersfield.
Okay. Same thing.
But they speak in Farsi, and they it's about like a girl that like skateboards and
like is
a vampire.
Did you put something on your Instagram about this?
No, not recently.
No. Okay, never mind.
But you should watch it.
Okay.
And honestly, like, people don't really, I mean, it's like, it has a cult following, but it's not recognized as like a great movie, but it's a movie that I saw and I wish I had made. Like, that's how I know I'm inspired. Whether it's that movie or it's Capernaum, which is like this movie right now that's up for an Oscar, like a Lebanese movie, or fucking Fleabag. Like, Fleabag.
Yeah, Fleabag is...
It's just
that's a show that
humor.
I watched all in one day and didn't mean to.
But like you should.
Yeah.
Like it's good.
It's so dark and funny.
Like, that's like a female creator that I aspire to be. Yeah, Phoebe Waller-Bridge. But she made Killing Eve and you like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. This is just a television podcast now. Okay. Well, where can our listeners find you on the medias? What are the things that they should follow as far as your work goes? Tell me about yourself.
All right. So I'm on Twitter and Instagram. She is not Melissa. That's because my name is Melissa with one S. And so I put the two S's in there. So, and then, you can listen to, we've talked about the podcast, Don't Blame Me with Megan Rinks. A Directionally Challenged with Candace King and Kayla Yule, which is a show about like 30 somethings trying to figure out life. And then Not Too Deep with Grace Helbig.
Yeah. They're all amazing podcasts. I particularly am a fan of Grace and Megan. I also haven't met the other two of them, but I might.
They're actresses from The Vampire Diaries.
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. And I respect that because I did watch that show. But. Follow Melissa on everything. She is someone I really admire, and she motivates me, and she's an amazing friend on top of all that. And I'm not just saying that because she's in the room, but that's the whole point of these bonus episodes is to bring your awareness to people that I really admire and that I like talking to that I also think can inspire you guys, especially those of you that ask us about podcasting and stuff. I think it's amazing that like you started as a PA and now you're literally a producer for one of the like biggest podcast as far as like
making the comedy genre is pretty big. We're always on the front page of iTunes.
It's fucking amazing. And I just think you remind me that I can do a lot of things and still not be trapped.
I feel like everything's a learning experience. And
whether it's a journey of vagina.
Yeah.
Because I will stand by this, but you are the best part about working on that. Meeting you and getting to know you was the best part about doing that weird-ass fucking web series where I had to get fucked.
You didn't get fucked. You were just on the bottom while
he was
man
humping
was
me.
Gyrating above you.
And I was wearing shorts that day, which was weird for me.
There's lots of pictures. I have them.
Oh, please don't. You have
I
to
don't.
Burn them all.
I mean, the few that I have found from them, I've sent them to you. Like,
yeah, that's
look how
true.
Different we are.
Like, look at my long-ass hair, look at your straight hair, and look at, like, my, like, short
your
shorts.
Your chicken legs.
I mean, they still are pretty chicken-like.
But they're very chicken.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. I wasn't doing enough yoga back then. But, yeah, I think... It's just telling of, like, you never know the people you're going to meet on these little projects. You never know what they'll become. Like, that was, like, 6-7 years ago, and now look at us now. Like, it's just, I don't know. It makes being, I think I'm also proud of myself for keeping this friendship because I'm very bad at doing those
Me
kinds
too.
Of things.
But I think I'm good at seeing, like, who the good people are to work with. And I've always, like, liked you a lot. Don't cry.
I just squeaked. Melissa is amazing. Please follow her on everything. And if you're a fan of podcasts, check out the ones that she produces. I'll link them all in the description and the footnotes. And I'll also, of course, link her social medias. You can follow us at Ethnically Ambiguous. Nope. How many times have I done this? You can follow us at Ethnically Amb on Twitter, AMB, and Ambig, ANBIG, on Instagram. You can go to Ethically Ambiguous Pod to check out all the other episodes, and also on iTunes and wherever. Make sure you check out our merch. By the time you're listening to this, we probably have some new designs out, so please check those out. Follow me at Shirohero, S-H-E-E-R-O-H-E-R-O on Instagram, and on Twitter it's Shirohero666, because I am. But yeah, thank you so much for being on, Melissa.
Thank you for having me.
And until next time, I always end with until next time.
You know, I say, like, stay wet all the time. So.
Fuck yeah. Until next time, stay wet. Bye.